You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I think he's the philosopher of football.
I'd like to have some more derbies.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory. We're trying to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental. I'm David Goss. No Andrew Wiebe. Continental, the best tires on the market. They could not drive Andrew fast enough from Portland to New York to get back for this show. So I'm filling in as the host, but alongside, what should I call you guys?
Your partners inside.
Should I say it?
Here at the AT&T MLS studio.
In New York, Midtown. New York. So Bobby got it in. Cool.
Matt set it up. Assist to Matt over there. Thank
Bobby,
you for that.
Bobby, that's a secondary assist. Yep. Bobby Warshaw, Matt Doyle, and Kalen Carr with me. We've got a lot to hit. It was a wild weekend of MLS action. We've got Leagues Cup coming up. We've got Rivalry Week on the verge. Starts on Wednesday night with DC hosting the New York Red Bulls. You've got LAFC San Jose Wednesday night as well. And then you've got games every single night all the way through the triple header on Sunday on Fox Sports. We've got potentially another MLS expansion team coming in. We've got an announcement.
Oh, potentially?
You never know. Listen, I don't know what's going on. You've got an announcement coming up, 12:30 p.m. Eastern time on MLSsoccer.com on Tuesday, August 20th in St. Louis, if you've heard of the city. We'll talk about that going forward, and we'll talk about, you know, all the wild and crazy things that happen across MLS, including what's going on in Vancouver in their front office. But to start it out, we've been out in the field, a lot of us, and we get to meet people around the world of Major League Soccer, and people are normally super complimentary of us. So it was another really good night for us on Sunday. Andrew Wiebe on the ground in Portland for the Portland Timbers versus Atlanta United, which was an MLS Cup rematch. Phenomenal game, great action, end-to-end stuff. And Andrew, of course, being the intrepid reporter he was, always engaged on social media throughout the game, tweeting out, and then there was a controversial play, whether PT Martinez had earned a penalty kick or not. And post-game, the blame went squarely on the shoulders of MLSsoccer.com.
Mm. Now, we're Pitti, and you go back to last Sunday against New York City, and Pro, if you missed it late this week, they rebate that was not called, that Pitti drew at the end of that match, which would have sent likely Joseph Martinez to the line for a hat trick.
And this is why I have a problem with league pundits saying that Pitti is a player who's cried wolf too many times. You just had the professional referees organization say that they missed a penalty on him. That's not crying wolf.
Yeah. Well, that particular league pundit is an idiot because he is carping on MLSsoccer.com right now that there is no clear second best team in this league right now.
I'm trying to figure out who else it could be.
It's not Philadelphia after losing 2-0 to Chicago.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not Minnesota after drawing with Orlando.
No.
San Jose, it's not them. They're running out of gas. Seattle's running out of gas.
So shout out to 92.9 for introing us on this show, getting us right into the topics. I'm going to have the idiots step back up to the plate now and try and talk. Who do you think they were talking about? So Andrew Wiebe tweeted something about crying wolf during the game.
Uh-huh.
At the same time, normally people are mad at Bobby. Sometimes you, Doyle.
Nobody ever gets mad at me.
Kalen's a puppy dog, so no one could ever be mad at me.
Every time I go on the road, all I get from people is saying, how is Matt Doyle in real life? Is he as smart as he seems?
We've got someone
and
sitting in.
Kind and generous and handsome.
So I'm willing to rule out that it's Matt at this point.
We've got someone sitting in the studio right now who said his brother thinks you're an idiot.
Mm, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, all right.
He told me not to tell you, so that's why I just threw it at you right off the bat.
I'm a little angry now.
So we don't know who it is.
So
we,
it sounds like the one part
is definitely
been
Andrew.
Directed at Andrew. Yeah.
Where do you think, hey, Bobby, you haven't spoken a lot this show.
I just know that the guy calling other people idiots didn't even know who he was talking about.
Yeah, that's fair.
He was conflating two people in there, which is fine. It happens.
Well, who are the two people?
Well, Wiebe tweeted out that PT is someone who cries wolf too often when he falls over. I personally, on Matchday Central last night, said that I do not think that Atlanta United are the second best team in the league because I don't think anybody is the second best team in the league. Yes, Atlanta United have won 5 of their last 6. 2 of those were a month ago, and they were not good. They were not impressive performances. Only 3.5 weeks ago, they beat Atlanta United, and it was a mediocre at best performance.
Wait, they beat who?
DC United.
Yeah, okay.
2-0. The last 4 games have been great. It's true. The Galaxy, NYCFC, Club America, and Portland have been great wins. this happens to just about every team in the league. Almost every team has a great month at some point, especially when three of the games are at home. So no, I am not willing to say that Atlanta United are definitively the best team in the league right now.
Just to come off... Come off the LAFC.
There's LAFC than the rest of the league.
Just coming off that, Atlanta United is currently first in the Eastern Conference. They won the Campione's Cup and they will host the U.S. Open Cup final next week.
Guys, it feels like we're getting a little distracted from this idiot comment. can we make a run back on that one?
So, I mean, the real question is, do we think that these radio hosts feel that Bobby is an idiot or Andrew is an idiot? Or both, and do we frankly support them in that?
Literally, hold on, can we just talk about how they called me an idiot, and then 35 seconds later, they put Columbus in the conversation for best second. What just happened there was that we had a conversation about the second best team in the league because you cannot trust recent results. If you go back through the league, just about every single team on the results page has some part of their 25 games where there are four straight green dots.
Remember that signal a win,
right? Houston, Columbus, Montreal, Minnesota, Seattle, San Jose, every single team has a four game run.
Can I give you the argument for Atlanta United?
Absolutely, and there's a very good argument, right? I'm not saying they're definitively not the second best team in the league, but you need to wait. You need to have more than a good 3.5 weeks to really say, especially what LAFC are doing, to really say you need to be taken seriously.
I think I agree with that. I do take Atlanta United seriously, like more seriously, I should say, than I think most of the other teams in the conversation. First of all, because Joseph is an MVP caliber player, and he showed it last year, and he's obviously showing it now this year as well. And when you have that alpha, it raises everybody's level. Second, we all have to be there now on Miles Robinson. He had a kind of a rough July, I guess end of June into July, and then over the past 4 weeks now, he has been just spectacular. What he did against Club, and it's not just his defense against Club America, it was like striding into the midfield with the ball on his foot and creating chances with his dribbling and passing. Nobody thought Miles Robinson had that. And then combining that with what we saw against Portland, because if you look at expected goals, this was a drubbing. This was Atlanta United, I think, 2.3 to 0.75. But there were times in this game where Portland had them, where Portland absolutely had them, and it was just that one touch away from getting Bryan Fernandez loose on the break. And Portland on the break are, I still think, the best team in the league. And Miles Robinson was always there to put a foot in to end it. So just having those two guys, and then you go up the spine, Darlington Nagbe playing the best soccer of his career, Jeff Larenowitz forever young, apparently, and PT and Barco not finding the final touch necessarily, but being influential in the game. So I think that between if you look at their last 20 games in MLS competition, they're 13-6-1. Between what they've done in the U.S. Open Cup, between what they did in the Campeones Cup against a very good Club America side, I think that they have a very strong argument to be that second best team. However, as Bobby said, it's not clear cut.
So then who else?
I mean,
that's the thing.
Yeah, NYCFC.
Bobby, who else?
NYCFC are obviously there. I think Portland are still there. I know they just lost to Atlanta United, but that might be matchup. Like we talked about this a little bit on Match Day Central last night. Like Portland might not be the second best team in the league, but I think they are obviously the worst matchup for LAFC. I think if anybody knocks LAFC out in the playoffs, it's going to be Portland because of that counterattack. Whereas at the same time, Atlanta might just be a terrible matchup for Portland because Miles Robinson is a one-man counterattack destruction machine. So that's when you get to this point, you're talking about not just quality, but you're talking about how these two teams match up against each other when they take the field. Maybe that makes me an idiot. I don't know. We're going to leave it to our friends
great club,
in Atlanta.
Great club. Come join.
I'm just glad to see the Adrian Heath movement.
I was about to say, for Atlanta and Minnesota, who have had their differences in the past, going into an Open Cup final, for them to come together,
we give them common
over
ground.
How bad MLS.com is,
yes,
is so nice to see.
I want somebody to go in on Kalen, though.
Look we at had, his face. Who
we had
go
Jeff,
in?
Jeff Cameron and, who was it, Hurt Gomez, got into our mentions, but I think that was related to Bobby a little bit, saying Wayne Rooney shouldn't. I was surprised to see Wayne Rooney back into the starting lineup after all that. Guess it didn't work out well for them. But.
Yeah, I mean, they lost, and they were very bad, like they've been for the last 3 months.
Quincy.
Wayne's a little upset about that. Before we finish, you mentioned NYCFC. Mm-hmm. Do the Philadelphia Union, does Minnesota, does the Galaxy?
No to Minnesota.
San Jose.
Galaxy have the talent to get there. San Jose, and Bobby and I talked about this briefly last night. San Jose are really, really good, and they have – part of what's made them good is every single week they have come out with A++++ effort. Every single week. A Wednesday game in the middle of April where most teams are like third gear, Matias Almeida's got them out there redlining. Well, it's the part of the season now where everybody is coming out that intense in every single game. San Jose don't have that inherent advantage anymore. The last couple of weeks, they haven't been able to get it done. I'm curious to see what happens from here on out because they're in a fight for their playoff lives.
I've got it pretty clearly with Atlanta United. I think they're the second best team when you look at the top end talent, which they surely have, them being defending champions. And then I think to Doyle's point, I think the defense is actually better than it was last year. I think Miles Robinson makes them a better defensive team. So I think very clearly in an East that's completely wide open, to me, Atlanta United is the favorite.
Two people on this table just earned themselves a guest appearance role on 92.9. Show. I don't know what the rest of that was. In Atlanta, one person over here is just going to be sitting. Bobby, you can come on my radio show anytime. I guess that would be extra time. So technically, you're already on it.
Can we just shout out Jay Riddle for you know, making all this happen?
You're the one who sent the clip to us.
Yeah, and Jay sent it.
Who's being sent down to the Open Cup final, by the way, for Atlanta against Minnesota?
I don't think anyone is.
I thought it was Wiebe.
No, Wiebe, I think, got nixed because he couldn't get back from Portland in time.
That would have been
Once
glorious.
We figured out Wiebe doesn't know how to fly.
Those post-game interviews would have been awesome.
Yeah, yes. Adrian Heath on one side and then Atlanta United on the other and Andrew Wiebe just lightning bolt right in the middle. Speaking about the playoffs, LAFC, the first team to clinch a playoff spot in 2019 with their 2-0 win over RSL. And Carlos Vela, guess what? He scored a goal. He sets the record for combined goals and assists in an MLS season, and we still have like 2 months to go left in the season, breaking Jovinko's record. Bobby, you look at Jovinko, Joseph Martinez, the other person who's going to get mentioned in this conversation as well, Miguel Almirón. How is what Vela's done maybe in any way different from what Jovinko did?
Vela's run has been incredible, but I will say that I found Jovinko in 2015, Miguel Almirón last year, and I might even put Landon Donovan back in the 11-13 stretch in those last 15 games of the year when he was absolutely dominant. Those three players, I thought, did it in a more thrilling fashion. That doesn't mean they're better. That doesn't mean they deserve more credit for it. But there's an interesting dynamic where Vela has put together the best numbers, the best season in single-season history, but I still thought just by watching them that Almirón, Jovinko, and Landon at times were actually more individually dominant, more individually incredible to watch. Is that a fair statement, or is that...
I disagree. I think it's a fair statement. I think, like, if you look through the history of this league, Almirón on the break, Landon on the break when he was in his prime, it's you know, a dunk from the free throw line, man. It was just spectacular. If you look at that 2015 Toronto FC team, that they didn't have much.
Yeah.
And so it was just give it to Jovinko and solve some problems. And he was able to do that in spectacular. But what Vela's doing week after week after week, LAFC's system is built to highlight him, player like him. There aren't many. But that's part of the thrill, to watch LAFC do this every week and to watch Vela time after time rise to the occasion, whether it's dropping deep to orchestrate play, sending in perfect set pieces, or this past weekend, RSL was the hottest team in the league, and LAFC were down to 10 men. And Vela still found the exact right moment to get out on the break and to draw the game deciding. Like, whatever the situation calls for, he's doing it. He's having the best single season in MLS history.
Here's something I've been thinking about lately. Take Carlos Vela out of that team. And this speaks to my question, because I think those other three teams I mentioned were built around those three specific players. This team is very much Carlos Vela fitting in to the larger scheme of what they do. So if you were to put a TAM level, not league average, but only slightly above league average, I would say Johnny Russell. If you would put Johnny Russell in for Carlos Vela.
Johnny Russell getting pot shots right now.
How many? That's not a pot. He's a very good player. You get what I'm trying to do here. He's another
Victor Rodriguez would be another guy like that.
Very different. I'm trying to, very different. Players left-footed, they play in a similar way. I think Johnny Russell plays almost the exact same way as Carlos Vela. Jesus, not Carlos Vela. Is this LAFC team still winning the Supporter Shield?
Yeah.
By how many points?
7, 8,
not 15.
You think if Johnny Russell was on this team instead of Carlos Vela, they would still be the first place team in Major League Soccer?
Yes.
Yep.
Then can Carlos Vela even be MVP?
Yes.
I have a strong opinion about this because I firmly believe the MVP should full on be your value over replaceable, your value over who else you can get next. That's why it should have been Miguel Marone, not Joseph last year. But sometimes you have a season that is so statistically phenomenal, Joseph Martinez in 2018, that you deserve it for that. It's understood. It's established that you weren't actually the most valuable player on your team. It's just what you did was so outstanding that you deserve the trophy anyway, which is why Vela deserves it this year, even though I'm willing to say he might not be the highest value above replacement within his team and system.
Who's that?
Who is the highest value above replacement? I said Piatti for the last few years, that if you had taken Piatti off that team, they were totally done and dusted.
But
they were okay with him without him at first, right? I think they started off like 3-0-1 or something like that. Piatti, Ladero was probably the next one, where if you take Ladero off that team.
Maybe it's Chad Marshall.
Yeah, Chad Marshall. Right? I mean, that's a whole other.
I get what you're saying, but that gets into the semantics of most valuable player or most outstanding player.
Right.
And I always vote as like who's the most outstanding player. And it's Carlos Vela, hands down. But if you look at this LAFC team, they have the best defense in the league. Just in terms of goals per game, goals against, all that. They have the best midfield in the league, I think. They have in Diego Rossi, a guy who might get sold for $10 million or more any moment now. They have in Adama Diomande, a guy who I still have questions about on a week-to-week basis. But if you look at his MLS career, he's played 2,300 minutes. He has 20 goals and 10 assists in 2,300 minutes. That if that was a season, that's an MVP season right there. So they have all that. And if you put like a Johnny Russell into that front line as well, they're not gonna score 85 goals and collect 78 points or whatever they're on track for. But it's still probably like a 65, 66 point team, which is Supporter Shield caliber this season especially.
You've said a couple times that you weren't sure that LAFC could win MLS Cup with Adama Diomande being maybe not their second best attacker, but their starting striker and a focal point of that team. Where are you on that after week 24?
I mean, he just had a spectacular game. He won them that game at RSL. It was his hold-up play and passing vision that combined with the Vela to win the penalty, and then he got the icer as well. When he's on, he is probably a top five center forward in this league.
Yeah,
it just feels so hit and miss with him. And in the playoffs, we've seen it, man. Like, you need that other guy to do it. In 2017, it wasn't Jovinko every game. It was Josie or it was Vasquez, you know. In 2016, it was obviously Ladero doing his thing, but Nelson Valdez, who couldn't buy a goal in the regular season,
legend,
started playing like the international caliber player that he was.
My add to that is, talent-wise, Diomande can definitely do it.
Yep.
Right? It's a question of whether he feels comfortable with his role in that system and allowing his talent to come out. The way I conceptualize Diomande is, I think he's in the second tier of talent for MLS strikers of Joseph and Zlatan, or in the top tier. Mm-hmm. Are we missing anybody in that?
I would throw Josie in there.
Okay. That's a question right there.
I mean, my argument for Josie is that 2016 and 2017 playoffs were the best playoff runs any individual player has ever had by both the eye test and by the numbers.
I would say in 2019, no, but I understand where you're coming from. The next tier for me, in terms of pure talent in center strikers, Mauro Manotas, Raul Ruiz Diaz, Josie, Gustavo Bow, and Brian Fernandez. I would put Adama Diomande in that category. We rate people like Fernandez and Bo and Ruiz Diaz and Manotas very high. Mm-hmm. I think talent-wise, we should think of Adama Diomande in that category as well.
I don't have a problem with that. It's just, is that going to show up? And LAFC are going to need that to show up in in the playoffs.
They might only need it one game. You know, they might not need it four times from him because of the quality of the rest of the team. And you talk about Vasquez and Josie. Well, they've got Kay. They've got Atuesta. They've got guys, Latif, who can create out of midfield, create chances. We'll see what happens for LAFC. They've clinched a playoff spot. They're setting records left and right. It's going to be a pretty fun run for them. They've got San Jose Wednesday night at home, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. That one on Unimas. And then they've got El Trafico at home on Sunday. So for your team who just set a couple records, when you ask, like, how do you keep them locked in? How do you keep them dialed in? Not that Bob's going to have that problem. There's a pretty good way to go about it with rivalry week coming up. And then we've got the last few weeks of the season. When you look away from LAFC and at every other team in the league, it's kind of a bit of a mess right now. In the Western Conference, from second place to eighth place, it's a 5-point difference between Minnesota United and FC Dallas. In the Eastern Conference, between fourth place and 10th place is a 6-point swing. That is basically everyone is alive right now with 9 or so games to play in the season. Have you ever seen anything like this?
It does feel like a throwback to maybe like 2011 and before. If you look at the standings before that 2012 season, and then especially the last few years with Tam, there's been a little bit more stratification. Back in the day, it was always, and Kalen can speak to this because his Houston teams were like this. It was like everybody just stay scrunched up right until, you know, midsummer, and then come August, you flip the switch, and that's where you try to get hot and to create a little bit of separation and run away from the teams who maybe spent themselves a little too much in the first part of the season. It does feel like that. I have to admit, I'm a little disappointed by that. I've wanted to see, like, what the Sounders did in the second half of last year, what DC United did the second half of last year, the fact that they didn't bring that into this season disappoints me as a fan. You know, if you watch what LAFC have done all year and San Jose for a good chunk of the season, playing that well with that much intentionality week after week after week, it's fun. And it feels like a lot of these teams have been sort of fumbling through the year.
But couldn't that still be happening? Like Minnesota United right now? If they continue on towards the last month and a half of the year and they're able to push forward, they've already been on a good run.
Mm-hmm.
Could you not reflect back on this time and say, wow, they really started to separate themselves?
You could.
There's almost no – Minnesota's last 8 games.
It's a blender, man.
It is. Like, there will be the underdog in – depending on how you feel about playing at Houston right now, they could be the underdog in every single game.
And they've got an Open Cup final to squish in between that one as well. But right now they're sitting in second place in the Western Conference, so they're, I guess, as safe as you could say any team is.
I don't think any of those teams, other than maybe Portland, I don't think any of the teams in the Western Conference race are safe.
And there's still a question mark around Portland of, okay, you have all these home games loaded up, but you also like to hit teams on the counter. Can you actually... It's a weird question to say, can you win at home? But
not only that, but how high do they want to climb?
Yeah.
I mean, they probably personally want to play a playoff game at Providence Park, but there's also a serious question of would it benefit them if Seattle or Real Salt Lake or San Jose feels the impetus to go and be the aggressor?
This doesn't feel that different to me. When I look back on past seasons, even Seattle finishing, where they finished it last year, they went on a run. I mean, they've kind of always climbed up where they – I remember Christian Roldan came out and said, we don't want to just get in the playoffs. We want to try and get a home game, get a high seed. I think they finished second.
Yeah, they did.
But they had to have literally the best half season in MLS history to do that.
Right. But I'm just saying the difference to me feels more that we have these runaway clubs now, because before, I'm not sure I remember that happening before. I said this with Toronto FC, which was one of the first teams – that I remember experiencing going into the playoffs and being like, yeah, they'll probably go all the way. They'll probably win it all. I just felt confident doing that. Last year, Atlanta United, same thing. This year, LAFC. So I think at the very top, you're starting to see that separation. But this sort of like jumbled madness of MLS beneath that all feels very familiar.
So let me put you on the spot. Of these teams, let's stay in the Western Conference. 2 through 8. Are still in it. Minnesota, LA Galaxy, RSL, Seattle, San Jose, Portland, FC Dallas. Who do you feel confident about from that group, and who are you less in on, we'll say?
Oh, man.
What happens when you go quiet for 15 minutes?
Yeah. I mean, it's
how you get people to call you an idiot.
It's literally all wide open. I mean, I feel pretty good about Minnesota United and the Galaxy. I feel pretty, I know I shouldn't be, but I feel pretty good about Seattle, Salt Lake, San Jose, Portland. I feel pretty good about Portland. So maybe four teams, even though they're it's all right in there.
Well, let's go FC Dallas, by the way, just outside of it. They have like they have games. They've played the most games.
They also have the easiest remaining schedule.
Nice, tidy schedule. A lot of it at home against poor teams. Who did you want to do, Bobby?
Let's use this as a transition to talking about Seattle.
Okay. Seattle Sounders.
I don't think Bobby feels good about Seattle.
Seattle Sounders were not able to beat the LA Galaxy. They went man up in the sixth minute. So they played 84 minutes man up. They were leading 2-1 late in the game. Oh, sorry, they were trailing 2-1 late in the game. And David Bingham
great
and Jordan Skelvick got creative, and they were able to get Seattle a result in that one. Congratulations to them. But are you worried about Seattle?
Yeah. I mean, I've been worried about Seattle for 3 years, David. But I'm certainly worried right now, and it came up after...
They won MLS Cup 3 years ago. Continue.
Do you really want to do that right
now? No, I don't want to do that.
Is that a thing you want to do? So this came up after they beat Atlanta 2-1 on July 14th. I wrote in my 24 takeaways that I felt they won that game, not because they were the better attacking soccer team, not because they played the free-flowing style that had made them so potent really in the second half of last year, but because they worked harder, because they were more combative, just because they did those little defensive things to win their duels against Atlanta United. And I wondered, is that the way forward for this Seattle team? Because it doesn't seem to me, especially without Chad Marshall and Ozzie Alonso, to use the buckets of water to keep it from sinking, from getting counterattacked. Could they still be the same attacking team? And I think that is more important than ever right now, because I don't know how you watch them play up a man against the Galaxy. And yes, maybe missing Victor Rodriguez matters that much. Maybe missing Brad Smith or only having Kelvin Leerdam just returned from injury matters that much. I understand that. But if your season is on the line, trying to get a home game, trying to fight for your spot in the playoffs, I would probably double down on the, you know what? We are actually a hardworking defensive team. Our first priority is to win our duels, to be competitive, make the game ugly for the opponent, and then we find our moments for Nico Ladero and Rui Diaz to have moments of magic. Similar to what I would say, it's similar to what the Galaxy did against an LAFC.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sounders are 6-8-6 in MLS play since mid-April. They don't. I mean, this past weekend, if they had just taken care of business, maybe we're not even having this conversation. We're saying it's fine.
Yeah.
They're second place in the Western Conference. Yeah, they were up a man and they gave up a headed goal to Zlatan, but they just got 3 points on the road against maybe the second most talented team in the league. The Sounders are going to be fine. But that performance from that team.
Compiled by the 3-0 loss at RSL. Compiled by just the bumbling.
Compounded.
You can compile on things.
Okay, you can compile on. Okay.
Compounded in a compiling way by the loss at Real Salt Lake, plus the ugly, ugly 3-3 at home against New England and the loss at home against Sporting Kansas City. It wasn't just the one
you're,
game.
You're right. And on top of that, Gustav Svensson angry at being subbed off with about 15 minutes to go, I think, in this game. And that's been the thing with the Sounders under Brian Schmetzer. People bang on him a lot for maybe like lack of tactical sophistication in his team, lack of variety and all that. But he's always had that team in his
corner. He did it in his own way.
He did.
That's fair. He did it in his own
way. And it was always like 90% of the time you were going to see the same lineup, the same formation, the same approach. And I think that's fine for most teams. And that kept that locker room together. And in his corner, you never saw anything like this. You're starting to see some cracks now. And I like that compiled with the poor results. It's got me worried. Like I think Seattle are on the verge of being a team in crisis for like just a second time in their history.
Positive news though, was Luis Silva one of your darlings?
I did. I like Luis Silva. Yeah,
I love Luis Silva.
Yeah.
He's back in MLS and he is going to save the Seattle Sounders.
I would like to watch a 4-4-2 with Ladero inverted on the right and Silva and Rui Diaz playing off of each other up top. I think that could work.
One of the things I learned today is when Doyle points at people, he looks like a character from a 1950s movie. That guy, Bobby. You learn something new every day. One of the
How many 1950s movies have you
like six.
Seen? Okay.
We do embody things from our childhood.
One of the things we were trying to learn a few weeks ago, we said the New England Revolution, incredible under Bruce Arena. They hadn't played a lot of great teams. They hosted LAFC, they traveled to Seattle, and they traveled to New York Red Bulls all in a row. They lost LAFC at home, as most people do. They went to Seattle, they got a 3-3 draw. They went to New York this weekend and got a 1-1 draw at Red Bull Arena. Did you learn anything about the New England Revolution in 2019? Are you more, less confident, the same?
The same for me. I mean, I just think Bruce knows what he's doing. I mean, sometimes you see a new manager come in and you get this sort of bouncer from doing that and the excitement and players trying to find a little bit of confidence. Then you see them building on that. And look, yeah, they lost against LAFC, but everybody, like you said, everybody loses to LAFC. That's just how it goes right now. And then to get 2 points on the road, that's very Bruce-like. So I think this is a playoff team. I'm not sure it's a team that's going to go deep in the playoffs necessarily. I just don't know if they have that in them. But against, I think, a stronger field when I look at Philly, NYC, and Atlanta United. But they're squarely in the playoffs. I think they're a strong team. And they've got Bruce behind them. So
yeah, getting results on the road is going to be key.
We all believe that Atlanta, NYCFC, and Philly are the top three teams in the East in some order, right? After that, it's kind of the same thing as the Western Conference, where you have DC United, who have played just brutal soccer for months.
I'm putting them back on the bubble.
Okay, they're on the bubble. The Red Bulls are maybe on the bubble. I think probably if you force me to pick a fourth place team.
Does the bubble push you up or down?
You're just on the bubble.
It's just a bubble.
You just exist.
Your first week following sports?
You exist inside the bubble. The Revs are on the bubble. Montreal won 6-1 in their last 8 games. They blew a 3-0 home lead against an FC Dallas team.
Or you could say they went up 3-0. Yeah, that's the glass half full.
Yeah, on the bubble. Somehow Orlando City have worked their way into the playoff race.
Here comes the big one.
Toronto FC.
No, that's not who I was talking about.
But like, we all agree, Toronto FC should be above this line. If you look at their raw talent, it's bizarre that they're not. And then Chicago Fire.
Do it. Are they on the bubble?
Yeah, Chicago's out. They're 1 point out.
What do you mean, are they on the bubble?
Chicago's 1 point out of the playoffs.
I think they've played 2 more games than everyone else in that little stretch.
They have.
Right?
They have. They need to win. They have 6 games left. They probably need to win 4.
I'll give you one. Dax McCarty said they need to win 7 to 8 of their last 10. Mm-hmm. And since then, they've won 3 of 4.
Yeah. I think it was 8 of their last 10 they probably needed to win. If you look like at the eye test all season, Chicago have had moments where they've played gorgeous soccer. Now, granted, those have usually come when they've been trailing. But they have the ability to do it. And over the last few weeks, they've mostly been able to do it from the first moment the ball's kicked. And then the other thing is Nemanja Nikolic has started scoring again. Yep. He has 5 goals in his last 4 games. And it's like, if your striker is scoring, you tend to play with more confidence and you tend to play better soccer. It's not rocket science.
It isn't, but
we're just idiots up here.
It has been for them in terms of keeping people out on the other end.
You don't get to claim yourself as an idiot, Matt. All right? Don't act like you get
that. Look at that 1950s style pointing you're doing.
How was it? Was that good form?
His was more early 90s style movies, but about the 80s. For Chicago, they have New England on the road this weekend. Then they go to Columbus. Then they host FC Dallas. Then they go to Cincinnati, and they close out with Toronto FC and at Orlando. So they play all the teams right around them, but they don't play Atlanta. They don't play LAFC. They don't play Philly. Like, you'd think it's a decent schedule. Just the question is, can they find the consistency? Yeah.
It's 7 teams for 4 spots.
Oof, that is beautiful.
And New England might actually be the first one to puncture into the bubble because they have 3 6-point games in their next 4. They do play the 3 teams below them, Chicago, then Toronto, both at home, NYCFC wedged in, and then at Orlando. So they might be the first team of all of these, depending on how many points they take from that, to have a definitive answer.
So what you're telling me is I should strap in for every game because everyone's a 6-point M8. That's what Bobby was telling me. It starts Wednesday night for this week of MLS action. NYCFC hosting Columbus at 7 p.m. Eastern time, and then an Unimas doubleheader.
I want to hear who Kalen thinks is going to make it from the Eastern Conference.
Thanks for cutting off my little promo read there.
Oh, sorry about that.
Do you want me to finish the read and then you can do it?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Think while I'm reading. Unimas doubleheader coming up on Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern time. DC United hosting the New York Red Bulls, followed immediately by 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on Unimas as well. LAFC for San Jose, and then Thursday night, rivalry week action on ESPN. Sporting KC hosting Minnesota, which I found out while in Minnesota is like arguably the closest geographical game. So it fits. It's perfect as a rivalry. And then Friday night action, doubleheader, rivalry week, a ton of games Saturday, and the triple header on Sunday, which we'll talk about on the next show. But Kalen, Doyle posed a question to you.
Yeah, I have Toronto FC in and Montreal out. Other than that, that's your playoff field.
Ooh. Going a little chalk as
so
it.
So Orlando.
Pick your order however you feel it. But okay. That's the way I see it.
Interesting. Okay, a little other news from this weekend, James Sands broken collarbone in NYCFC's 4-1 win. So it looks like miss a large stretch of the season. Sporting KC finally gets a victory. They knocked off San Jose at home 2-1. Abu Dunlady with a 90th minute equalizer. And then the Vancouver Whitecaps defeated DC United 1-0 in their game. Not what we're going to talk about, though. We're going to talk about them as a club. Bob Lenarduzzi, who's been around the club for 45 years, is stepping out of his role as president. He will remain with the club in some capacity, and it is going to be filled with a new position, a sporting director, that is going to lead the entire technical side from a soccer point of view. Doyle, this is a club that came into the league with a lot of energy, part of Cascadia. I thought for many years it was one of the most fun environments to watch games in. I've never been. They made the playoffs pretty early in their existence and then played the LA Galaxy. Carl Robinson took over. There was positive moments, negative moments. They've sold one of the most expensive players in MLS history. But it's been on a downward roll for the last few years. Is this move enough?
It's been meh moments. And Lenarduzzi got 8 years, 9 years really, if you think about the ramp up, to try to build something that was year over year sustainable. And teams like the Red Bulls have showed you don't need to spend, you know, copious amounts of cash to be a consistently good team in this league. And Vancouver have never really been that. They've been a yo-yo team, 1 year in, 2 years out, never making any kind of noise in the playoffs. He's still with the club, and he's done a lot of good work in Vancouver, from what I understand. But I think this feels like it's the right move to try to modernize a little bit. And if you look at getting a new president, getting a new coach, and I know they've struggled this year, but I actually think Mark DeSantis is a very good coach based upon what I've seen from his teams in the past. I got to see that San Francisco Deltas team close up quite a bit back in 2017. I do think that this helps in the long run, but it's going to take, like, it's not happening this year, and it might not happen next year as well. It's going to take some patience, and it's going to take some vision from whoever they sign as that sporting director.
But can't Vancouver fans say, look at Philly, look at San Jose, why does it have to take so long?
I mean, Philly, it took forever.
Yeah,
they hired Jim Curtin in 2014. They've made the playoffs, I think, once in his first three seasons.
But they've never made noise, and then this year they're second place in the
East. There were better examples to use there.
Yeah.
They look at San Jose. Why does it take so long?
Matias Almeida is literally the most successful manager in CONCACAF in, like, the last 50 years, just in terms of the amount of trophies he won for the amount of seasons that he coached at Chivas. Like, Matias Almeida is not replicable almost in a lot of ways. Now, you could say, all right, go out and get that guy, but it's not clear who that guy is. Like, who's the next one to do that? And also, by the way, the Quakes might not make the playoffs. So it's not exactly a slam dunk. I think that the smarter play here is to trust that Mark DeSantis has passed both as an assistant and as a very good head coach at a lower level. And then, you know, hopefully they keep signing academy products. Hopefully they keep finding guys in the draft. They've gotten a couple of decent ones over the last few years. You know, hopefully they can build that core and then get the type of DP signing who can, you know, elevate the players around them.
It is hard to do it this direction, though, where you get the sporting director, but you already have the manager. You already have the head coach. Yeah. Because if you really want to give the sporting director the keys, you'd like to have them start with hiring a manager. And Mark Dos Santos, I agree. I think he's a proven manager and to be successful over time wherever he's been, and actually not even over a lot of time. He's been able to find success quickly. This has proven to be more difficult. And he needs some support, because the days of having the manager do everything, all due respect to Bruce, because he's doing it again, is sort of behind us in MLS. Yeah. You need people to go out there and be able to run things, look in the market, find smart signings, oversee the academy, and then the manager run the first team and try and contribute elsewhere. But it's harder to do it this way than in reverse. So it'll be interesting to see, does Dos Santos have a say as far as who the sporting director is? How do these two mesh together? So that's part of the challenge here for Vancouver.
Vancouver Whitecaps right now in last place in the Western Conference, but still alive because everyone's still alive because it has been chaos this season. It'll be a lot of fun to watch. We've got a great week of soccer coming up. When you talk about MLS, you talk about expansion. I can neither confirm nor deny, but there will be an announcement at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time on MLSsoccer.com.
That sounds like you know something.
I don't even work here, so I don't even know who you're talking about. Don Garber will be joining the group MLS for the Lou, as well as the St. Louis mayor, to make an announcement. Taylor Twellman will be emceeing it. That's all I can confirm. How do you guys feel about this recent development?
MLS for the Lou. It must be Louisville.
Oh, wow. That's obviously the first direction Doyle has to go in for me. Sorry. The announcement will be occurring in a city called St. Louis.
Oh! Yeah. I think it's cool. St. Louis is, I think we all know, the like kind of the ancestral home of soccer in the U.S. If you look back, every men's World Cup roster since 1930, the U.S. team that's made it has had a guy from St. Louis, at least one, often multiple. I talk to Twellman every now and again. He says, like, it's going to be like Portland. It is going to be a town where as soon as the MLS team is in there, it matters at the highest level, and it's going to be sellout after sellout. I hope that's what we get. I hope Taylor's right about this.
Because the Portland fans were going to USL games before that. I'm not saying St. Louis isn't. They're averaging, like, 6,000 to 8,000.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good,
not
right?
In the city.
Yep. But this stadium is supposed to be like kind of right downtown, very easily accessible via mass transit and via the highways out there. I hope it works, and I hope they have an immediate heated and hate-filled rivalry with both Chicago and Kansas City. I think that would be dope.
Yeah, Susanna and Andrew were on the show last time, so we heard a lot about the Midwest and how people hate other Midwest cities. But in reality, the way they hate each other cities, I think, is still like nice for what we do on the East Coast. But I'm not totally sure. That's exciting news. We'll see what happens with that one. And outside of MLS action, we've got Leagues Cup semifinals this week, a doubleheader on Tuesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, Club America against Tigres at a sold-out BBVA Compass Stadium in Houston. That one's on 2DN and ESPN2, and then it's followed up the doubleheader with Cruz Azul heading to the LA Galaxy, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time as well on the same two channels, ESPN2 and 2DN. And Bobby, all four of the teams were required to put in their 23s that will be available for selection in the 18 going into this game. And you see some really strong groups from Club America, from Tigres, from Cruz Azul, and the LA Galaxy, who got through with a rotated group in the quarterfinal. No Zlatan, no Jonah Dos Santos, no Pavone.
Yeah, it's frustrating. David, I talked to Hercules Gomez. Gomez. I talked to Hercules Gomez a lot about the MLS Liga MX matchups. And one thing he says is Liga MX teams do well because, and the line he uses is, they want to win in everything, even in marbles, right? And then we see the MLS teams, and yes, they're mid-season, whereas Liga MX are a little early in their year. They don't play their strongest lineup. And it seems to me that if you truly want to be an elite club, not just any club, right? I would argue that any club needs this in their DNA. If you want to be the Los Angeles Galaxy, and credit to Atlanta United for going into Campeones Cup and playing a lineup and playing with a mentality that could win that game, that is why Atlanta United is in a tier of ahead of everyone else right now, because they have this ingrained into their DNA that they want to win in everything, whether it's marbles, whether it's soccer, whether it's walking down the street. And I find it disappointing that the LA Galaxy, with all those stars and that sash and all that pomp that they claim to have, do not approach this game like they have to win or die.
It's not a bad point, although for the LA Galaxy, it worked for them in the quarterfinals. We'll see what happens.
and they might win, and credit to them if they have the depth to win, but it would be a stretch.
It'll be interesting to see, starting next year, you assume LAFC wins Supporters Shield. They'll be in CCL,
yep.
Right? Bob Bradley has already said they want to contend for Open Cup. They cared. They just lost to the team that it looks like maybe is their worst matchup. And then you start to get into Leagues Cup and Campione's Cup, whatever they qualify for. It'll be interesting to see how they treat
competitions. If you're in
CCL, you cannot be in Leagues Cup.
Right.
But you could be in Campione's Cup if you win MLS Cup. Right. So we'll see what happens.
You guys all just finished saying the Galaxy might not make the playoffs, though.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. No. I got no problem with that.
America and Tigres might not make the playoffs.
Make the playoffs. You're the LA Galaxy, man. Make the playoffs. Win Leagues Cup. Win Open Cup. Win Champions League. Win Campeones Cup. You have a sash on your jersey, for crying out loud. Win trophies. Every trophy.
Bobby Warshaw, ladies and gentlemen.
I like that.
For Campeones Cup, what happened last week felt like a big moment in the environment, in the atmosphere around the game. I think when you watch Club America Tigres in front of a sold-out crowd with the best teams they can put out there against each other on Tuesday, everyone's going to be like, oh, Leagues Cup is here now. Because it's going to be good soccer. It's going to be fun to watch. I know Kalen's going to be locked in. I will be at the LA Galaxy game, but I'm excited about that one because Cruz Azul, it's a very MLS-centric team, and so that'll be fun to watch them go up against the LA Galaxy. And that is most of your soccer for the week. So you have a doubleheader on Tuesday. You've got three games on Wednesday, rivalry week Thursday, and then we go into the weekend. Is there anything else you could want in life?
David, what rivalry are you looking forward to the most?
For this week?
Yes.
That's a good question.
I'm looking forward to El Trafico.
It'll be my first one.
Yeah.
I got there for Leagues Cup 3 days after it last time, and they were like, you should have been here last week.
Let me ask you this, because I've been thinking about it a lot since Philadelphia came into the league a decade ago now. It just seems like D.C. versus Philly should be one of these rivalries. Maybe not at the level of like Montreal versus Toronto, just because there's so much history there, but like the proximity is there, the fan bases overlap. Obviously, they play each other multiple times every single year, and it hasn't happened. Is it just because these two teams haven't played each other in big games yet?
I actually have an answer to this, at least from my own personal experience. Growing up in Harrisburg, my town is split between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. I was raised a Philadelphia sports fan and everything. I grew up a DC United fan because we didn't have the Philadelphia Union. Philadelphia people, Harrisburg people, we were already had an allegiance to DC United. It made it awkward when the Union, a Philadelphia team, in the same way that the Sixers and the Eagles and the Phillies were Philadelphia teams. So I didn't know what to do with that relationship. I wasn't going to switch from DC United to the Union. But at the same time, I didn't necessarily want to cheer against a Philadelphia team who had the same brethren as all my other favorite players.
So it might take a few more years. Or like maybe
a generation.
Yeah. All right.
Yep.
It's a good answer.
You look at the games, by the way. Friday night is the Southeast one, Orlando, Atlanta, and then followed by Cascadia Cup. Saturday, you've got New York, which is awesome. You've got Toronto, Montreal, which is great. RSL, Colorado. It's Nick Raimondo's last ever Rocky Mountain Cup game. Tim Howard on the other side. So that's a pretty cool environment. And that one will be in RSL at Rio Tinto. And then first ever Hell is Real at Nippert Stadium on Sunday. It's going to be pretty orange. That's going to be pretty cool. If you remember when they played in Open Cup before Cincinnati was in the in Major League Soccer and Columbus brought like a huge section, they filled a whole portion, and Cincinnati, that was the first win
This is what I'm saying, right? Because I'm sure there were Cincinnati-based Crew fans,
right,
who as soon as FC Cincinnati started to exist, dropped the Crew like a bad habit, man. And like, this feels like a real rivalry already. I want Philly and DC to get there. Anyway, sorry.
I think there's an easy way to solve this. I think you need to get in a car, you need to drive to Philly and DC and just stand out on the street and tell people you need to be mad at DC United or the Philadelphia.
Mad as hell and not going to take it anymore.
Exactly. I think that's what you need to do.
I think also the time when Philly came into the league, we didn't have the same buildup as far as geographical rivals. And also DC's energy was spent elsewhere. They have the historic rivalry with
The Red Bulls.
Which, by the way, Red Bulls fans having NYCFC in their backyard are saying, well, DC's our rival. So
old school Red Bulls fans say that.
Every Red Bull fan says that. Right. But I think they might say it to be cool. I'm not sure. Unconfirmed whether or not that's why they
just say watching it. Those games, whether it's DC versus Red Bulls or NYCFC versus Red Bulls, it comes through the screen at you. There's a different feeling when it's NYCFC.
Yeah.
I can neither confirm nor deny. I don't know.
So things change. There's hope for you.
Yeah, things do change. We've got some more coming up on Thursday for you. Of course, we'll preview all those weekend games. We'll talk Leagues Cup, and we'll see who's in the final, which will be in Las Vegas. Are you going?
I'm going in the lead up to the League Cup final.
You're not staying for the game?
I don't know if I'm going to go to the game.
Okay.
I may be here covering it, but I'm going to I'm going to look at the kind of like build up to it.
Okay.
So well, I'm hoping the Galaxy get there because that would just make my life a lot better.
Okay. So LA, if you could do us a favor, all I think
listen to Bobby's pep talk, please. Yeah. Come on, fellas.
Win everything. That's your job.
That's a good pep talk, by the way. And you're right. If you want to be the Barcelona or the Manchester City or the Bayern Munich or the Juventus of MLS, you have to play every game like there's a trophy on the line. You do.
And the complaint is like, well, salary cap, how do we add people? You just added Pavone.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have a hand behind your back, if I'm jumping on Bobby's point, which I agree with. You've got a stacked roster, and you have the ability to stack it at times. Yeah. Like, now let's go win soccer games.
See, I actually think that's a distraction, David. And that takes away from the point. Forget the money, dude. I would say the same thing about the teams that spend the least amount of money in the league. You're either that kind of person.
No, stop.
You're either that kind of organization or not. Listen, you don't have to actually win everything. But you sure as hell better play the lineup and have the mentality and approach that game. And I just don't see it from enough of these clubs, right? I don't see enough of these clubs where if you don't win, you can't breathe, not just as players, but as an organization. And that is an inherent competitive advantage that the Liga MX teams have over the MLS teams, is that win or suffocate emotionally feeling.
I'm sorry. If Monarcas or Santa or Pumas was in this competition, I don't know that they would have the same ability. Because it does come down to budget and your ability to have a deeper roster and to put players out there consistently and still be able to start good teams on the weekend or when you do rotate, still be a good lineup. So that does come into part of the factor. And that's why I say the Galaxy, because with Houston, Chicago, and Salt Lake, I understand the concept of we're fighting for a playoff life.
Salt Lake played their first 11 against Tigres, man. Yeah. Salt Lake went after them
game. You're right.
And they should have won that game.
They deserve credit for that.
And they should have won that game as well. But you can understand the concept of we've got big playoff games. We don't have enough players, whatever. Okay, we'll see what happens on Tuesday. We'll see how it all spins out. We talked about Defensive Player of the Year last week, about who our options are, and Luke Southmart says, y'all are giving mad disrespect to Robin Jensen. He's holding Orlando up by himself.
He's been good. It's not.
Doyle
it's not,
just rolled his eyes and scoffed.
He's been good. He's been a top half center back. He doesn't deserve to be in the Defender of the Year conversation, but he's been good, and he deserves probably more credit than he's been given.
So top 15 center back in the league.
That
top
makes
12?
You pop.
No, heavy. Stop. Center back or defender?
Center back.
That doesn't get you in the conversation. That puts you as like a top 30 defender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, if you
wait,
watch
wait,
him,
you,
I don't know.
You have him higher?
I don't know. No, probably not. No, probably not.
I mean, just off the top of my head, Robinson, Zimmerman, Ike.
Segura. Parker, Long. Maybe Long.
Neither.
Neither. Oh, in 2019, right now?
2019.
I don't know where.
Chanot and Collins.
Yep, and
for
Sands.
Sure. I don't know if I put Sands there yet.
I don't know where Matt Hedges is at this point. He was strong earlier in the year, a little.
Are we talking center backs now, or are Hedges. We talking?
I'm talking just center backs.
Got it.
Justin Glad. We got to put Justin Glad in there.
Whoa.
The on-off splits.
He's back in the convo.
Justin Glad, when Justin Glad plays this year, they're 11-3-3 with a plus 19 goal differential. When he sits, they're 1-7-2 with a minus 15 goal differential.
You undersold. 1-7-1.
1-7-1 with a minus 15 goal differential. Those on-off splits, that's like Diego Chara level. I'd throw Mabiala in there over Janssen as well.
Would you put Youngworth?
Yes, for sure. I was forgetting about Florian Youngworth, and people can say, like, people who haven't watched the Quakes a lot don't understand how important he has been to that team. Janssen's been good. Sané has been pretty good as well, but they play with three freaking defensive midfielders in front of them.
All right, this is why we do the mailbag, so that you guys can get yelled at by your heroes like Matt Doyle. If you're not watching on YouTube, you didn't see the eye roll, so go on YouTube, watch the show. The full show comes out on YouTube every day, as well as, of course, your favorite podcasting apps, in which you can rate us and give us 5 stars, and then we'll be better at what we do. I don't know if that is how that works, but I'm going to assume it is. Eric Erickson here wants to know, when will Steve Ralston land a head coaching job in Major League Soccer?
From St. Louis.
Is he?
From St. Louis.
Whoa!
Just saying.
What is he even doing this year? Because he,
I'm looking it up right
still
now.
Still in the Bay Area.
The assistant coach with AC St. Louis right now. Does that sound right?
No, AC St. Louis closed like 6 years ago.
Yeah. He was the interim after Michael Starra got fired.
What's the current St. Louis team?
FC St. Louis.
He was the interim after Michael Starra got fired. You said he's still in the Bay Area. I mean, I don't know if he's... He went winless as an interim head coach.
Oh, yeah, but that is what
it's fair. I like the way his team played. I hope that somehow he gets involved with this St. Louis team because he's a legend from the area.
Give let's say...
If you're looking at former Kalen Carr teammates or...
You have a great coaching tree, Kalen.
Yeah, I actually thought what Wade Barrett did a couple years ago with Houston when he had a run as interim head coach. That team went from a disaster under Owen Coyle to like really, really solid. Is that?
Yep.
Will Bruin put out the tweet, and that's why he got traded. He publicly said,
another
"Bring
St.
back
Louis guy."
Yeah, publicly said, "Bring back Wade Barrett." And then
what's Wade Barrett doing now?
So give people an idea. You can do it from a Houston point of view or just general. What are the names you'd want to see in the Houston's looking for a coach, Salt Lake's looking for a coach? There might be other teams looking for a coach soon. What are the names fans should be looking at to see who their team's interviewing and who could be the next generation of MLS head coaches?
I don't know. San Jose getting Almeida just changed everything. I mean, right. You would never – same thing. You talk about the interim head coaches they had and then the names that they were sort of – rumored to be looking at, and then they went out and got, as Doyle said, one of the best managers in the region. So I would love to see Houston go for that personally. Like, I think with the team that they have, the makeup that they have of that team, the style of play that I think they could play, if they could go down and make a designated player level signing as a coach, that's what I would like to see. Miguel Herrera would be my dream choice. I would just love to see. If he was in Houston, I mean, that would be completely a game changer.
And he wouldn't just call us idiots. He would punch us.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, but obviously he's at Club America right now. But I'm saying, I don't know.
But he's a guy who's said he wants to come to MLS in the past.
I don't know who the names would be.
Chepo De La Torre would be a big one. Former Mexico and Chivas boss. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we've seen the impact you can have on a roster where you look at that San Jose team and we look at these longer projects of Vancouver and how much time that might need to take. And then other
or even
places.
Atlanta United with Tata.
Yeah. And
obviously
other,
spent differently.
But yeah, but how much a big coach can come in and change things. So I would love to see Houston go out there and go for it. I don't know if St. Louis is going to take that sort of big step. You saw Austin go with a little bit more of a tried and, well, I don't know, he's never had a head coaching job, but someone that understands the system better, has worked with the national team and MLS with Josh Wolf, who I think those are really good hires. But I would like to see
Cincinnati went out in left field and signed Ron Jans.
Everybody wants their club to do it. I would love to see Houston go out and show some ambition and go after someone big.
I think that the name that keeps popping into my head is Eduardo Cude, who's one of the best young managers in Argentina right now. He had a cup of coffee with the Union at the end of his career. You know, I think he played for Miami FC when that was a thing.
Knows the country at least.
Knows the country at least. And his Racing team, they won the Argentine Primera last year. They're not as off to as good a start this year, but they play beautiful soccer. He's been at Tijuana as well. That didn't go as well, but I thought that team... The reason it didn't go as well is because he tried to get Tijuana to play actual soccer. That club cannot play actual soccer. They can only sit and counterattack. I would love to see a team go for Cude, but at the same time, let's not overlook the fact that you can get a guy like Gio Savarese out of the local second division here. He was with the NASL for a long time, and like in his first MLS season, he leads the Timbers to the playoffs or to the MLS Cup appearance. So like, make it a global search, make it a local search as well.
And then end up with Jurgen Klinsmann.
Get the right coach. And then for the sake of our content, end up with Jurgen Klinsmann, please.
For St. Louis, it is to point out, Anthony Pulis, Tony Pulis' son, is the manager. He was with Orlando City as their reserves manager as well as a youth academy coach, and he led them as deep as any USL team went this year to the quarterfinals of the Open Cup. So probably has an opportunity at that job specifically. But as we mentioned, there are a few openings around Major League Soccer, and there might be even more. You never know. Last one here, Dylan from Appleton, Wisconsin. You guys talk about bringing in big coaches. He wants big ownership. We talked about what celebrity would you like to see be a part owner of your team, like James Harden is with the Houston Dynamo. I said Lizzo in Minnesota. Shout out Lizzo. Mm. And then everyone else talked about Kanye because everyone else is basic. Dylan in Appleton, Wisconsin wants this ownership group to come together and create an MLS team in Wisconsin. He's got Aaron Rodgers, soccer fan apparently, mm-hmm. Man City, and a part owner of the Milwaukee Bucks. J.J. Watt, who's a native of someplace in Milwaukee that I can't pronounce and, of course, is married to a professional soccer player. Wes Edens is a part owner of the Milwaukee Bucks and an Aston Villa owner. I didn't even know that. And all combined, they have a net worth of just under $5 billion.
No Jay DeMarit? Come on, you got to get Jay DeMarit involved in that.
He did come back with a PS Giannis.
Pretty good.
In the market. I don't know if Jay DeMarit has the money right now.
The obvious one, you got to get Embiid into the Philly group. So
there you go. Although someone's saying he lives in New York, no one knows. Let us know who you want to be your DP coach for your MLS team, as well as your DP owner.
Steph Curry for the Quakes.
There you go. Doyle's just going to rattle these off. So we're going to cut it off, and then we'll post that on later.
Marvin Bagley and Darren Fox for Sacramento.
Apparently he could do this all day. Thanks so much for watching. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll talk to you on Thursday. We'll be right back.